Philosophers.
Philosophers.
David.
Joe.
Do accidents, do true accidents exist? Like things that are truly no one or nothing's fault?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Or would it still be an accident if we thought it was nothing's fault?
I think, yeah, if you extend it all the way to things, inanimate objects, then yes, you can find an ultimate cause for everything.
Okay.
In principle, anyway.
Philosophers. No. Because this is interesting thing to me. What about with just people? Like,
yes. Accidents definitely exist with people.
Okay. But what is an accident?
An unintended consequence.
Okay. How do we often determine fault in accidents?
How do we determine fault in accidents?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about the word from two different ways. Because
yeah.
There's the one way in which someone's like, ooh, I've had an accident. Like, you do something to yourself and you claim accident, right?
Sure.
Then there's the other case where someone does something to you and then they say, I'm sorry, it was an accident, even though they suffered no negative consequences. In both cases, they can be accidents, I guess, by definition, right? Like, there was an unintended consequence,
mm-hmm.
Right?
There's a line to be drawn between a true accident and negligence.
What's the difference?
Negligence would be an accident. Negligence is a subset of accidents in which, you know, we can say that you should have known better. Like, or you could, a reasonable person, our favorite thing,
oh, God.
Our mythical reasonable person, would have taken so-and-so an extra step to not do this. But you, in your negligence, allowed it to happen. Like, okay, classic but benign example of negligence. Children not watching where they're walking and banging their head into something. Like, that is an accident, but had they only watched where they were going, it wouldn't have happened.
Right. A reasonable person watches where they're going.
Right.
Same thing, I guess. Person driving car strikes child that wandered in the street.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could argue that they were both being negligent.
Depends on the scenario, maybe. If you're driving through a neighborhood, then it's foreseeable that there will be children running in the street.
Right. Okay.
Change. So the then it's negligence if you hit the child. But if a child runs out on like the interstate.
I was going to say, it's not a neighborhood. It's like a country road in the middle of nowhere and you're driving like 5 miles an hour.
Oh, well then, yes.
You could stop pretty much on a dime.
Yeah, then yeah, clear negligence if there's a collision at all. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's interesting to think about. I don't like that. I hate. We need to come up with a caricature of the reasonable person.
Okay.
And like take some of the most outlandish legal court cases to construct our reasonable person. Like things that we as society have deemed a reasonable person does. Mm-hmm. And that becomes our standard for the reasonable person. Because I think it's ludicrous and ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, the standard basically is, but I mean, this is just as subjective. But like your measurement of would a reasonable person do so and so a thing is like, was the consequence foreseeable to the average person? Because like, you may not be able to call someone negligent if they are in it. Now, okay, lots of qualifiers here.
Nay.
But if they're in a situation, you know, if they somehow ended up in a situation that they weren't prepared for, that, you know, maybe somebody else would have trained to be in this situation, but they ended up there somehow. Like, okay, suppose you're on a passenger flight, right? And the pilot dies, you know, has a heart attack. And no one on the plane is trained to be a pilot, but someone decides, okay, well, I guess I'm going to take the controls because otherwise we're all dead anyway, and everyone else is okay with this. But they crash anyway because he doesn't know how to fly a plane. I wouldn't call that negligence.
Okay, this brings up an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Would it not be a better standard instead of saying with the reasonable person to change it to would this person reasonably?
Yes, okay.
So this would help you in the case of the...
Yes, would this person reasonably do it? Well, this person reasonably foresees that he's going to die if nothing is done. And right. So tries to do something but still fails.
Right. Now, it's the inverse case where this gets kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Because my issue with the reasonable person is it applies a standard universally. Mm-hmm. Like, we all are held to the standard of the reasonable person, regardless of whether or not we actually... whether or not you think that you have a responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. for example, some would say a reasonable person does this, right? And there are cases where I think this might be the same, right? Like, say, for example, like... take a person who doesn't know how to drive a car, right? Mm-hmm. And replace plane with car.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get over the nuances of how easy it is to, or how difficult it would be to switch places with the driver. To get into
the driver's seat, yeah.
Assume it's one of those student driver cars that has two wheels, two brakes, uh-huh. everything, right? And you're the passenger in this case, and the passenger does not know how to drive a vehicle, right? But I would assume that it would be reasonable to expect that most people to know how to drive a car, right? Or is this the same as the passenger plane example?
Yeah, I think this is the same as the past. I don't think you can put a reasonable expectation that everyone must be trained to do this particular thing.
Okay. Fine.
Even though people in our society do know how to drive a car.
I'll go to my pocket example. There was a couple who had a home that was not the home that they lived in. I forget the names. That they owned two homes. Mm-hmm. One was like an old dilapidated home that was a former family member's. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They did not live in this home. They did not occupy this home. However, people kept breaking into this house.
This is the case of the shotgun booby trap. That's yes, where this is going.
That's exactly where this is going.
Yes.
So
anyway, they get tired of people breaking in. So they set up a shotgun booby trap. Someone breaks in, gets half of his leg blown off by a shotgun. And he sues them and wins.
Right. Why?
I don't agree with the outcome of this court case.
I don't either.
Right. I know you don't.
But do you know why it was ruled that way?
Because think of the children. What if a child ran in there and just to play around or something in the abandoned house and then got shot?
Sure. But there's also this level to it of the mindset that it is unreasonable to do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because otherwise, in the think of the children narrative, what they're saying is, man, if this was a kid who somehow stumbled into this property, because the argument was made at the time, the doors were locked, the windows were boarded up, that we did not just leave the house open.
I tripped and fell into this house. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
So that justification is kind of BS to me.
Right.
These people took every measure to prevent people from going somewhere that was dangerous, that they knew was dangerous, that the person went into anyway. But the problem was that the danger was created by people who wanted it to be dangerous and intentionally also lowered the shotgun to knee height so that they didn't shoot the person and kill them. They didn't want to kill somebody. They wanted to create a level of danger as deterrence, which, by the way, is something our government does all the time with no problem. But that's unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the assumption being made. So what you're now doing is saying, oh, we're going to outlaw this thing because it's unreasonable. Not because it's wrong, necessarily, because we can all agree in that specific scenario, the guy breaking into the house was definitely in the wrong.
Right.
But because it's unreasonable. And that chafes me up good. Like, because I don't even think that the people who did that would have tried to shirk the responsibility if it was the child thing. Like, they understood and probably would agree. Yeah, if a child walked in and got their face blown off by some legitimate circumstances, then yes, we killed that kid. We accept those consequences. But we have mitigated that risk good enough to allow us to set up the scenario.
Right, so the only person who's going to set off this trap is someone who is breaking and entering, presumably to steal stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and that's a good case of, would it be reasonable for this person? Or for this person, would it be reasonable? Because the other reason laws like this get made is not for these people. The judge is sitting there thinking, because in this case, there was not a jury trial. It was a judge. It was a bench trial. The judge also had to consider that this is going to become a precedent. At that, if this was allowed to go through and allowed to happen, these people may have done a good job of preventing a child from getting shot. But the next person might not.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm proposing here, I think, would catch both cases. Is it reasonable for this person, given their circumstance, which, by the way, is having a house that's been continuously broken into and have taken every measure to prevent...
Years of history of people robbing this house.
Right.
Yeah.
They have every reason to try to deter theft. They have every reason. They took every measure reasonable to, you know, make sure that that didn't happen to someone who they didn't want it to happen to, that we would have also agreed probably deserved it. That's a different question, you know, but most people aren't arguing that. Most people don't argue that you getting shot in the knee by a shotgun is justice for what you did. That's not what most people are arguing. But they're making this decision because they're thinking, yeah, but what about the guy who doesn't take any of the precautions? The irresponsible, unreasonable person in this case goes and tries to do the same thing.
Right, so send him to jail.
That's
send
my,
that guy to jail, yeah.
Exactly. That's my thing. But the answer would be like, yeah, but then but a kid still dies in that case. And I don't know. I just don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and? Like... It sounds really awful to say, but I do not think that I have like this. It is not my, other people's children are not my responsibility, like, frankly. Like, I'm not saying I would want to go out of my way to hurt other kids. I would be responsible for harm. But like, how can it be my responsibility to, you know, create this scenario and make sure that, you know, not even that, like,
yeah, why should it be illegal to set this up in a quote unquote safe way just because somebody else might not do it the quote unquote safe way?
Right.
Right. Yeah, why is there not a qualifier on it because of the way that they did it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So what does this have to do with accidents?
Not
whether they exist.
Not very much. This was actually kind of a tangent.
Yes.
It was an accidental tangent.
Well, there we go. I rest my case. There was an accident.
I guess the thing that I was thinking about when I originally posed this question is something that I've thought about a couple of times. I do not like when people say something was an accident.
Hmm.
If it's primarily in the second case of from way back when we first started talking about this, like,
well, yeah, someone does something to you and then says, oops, sorry, it was an accident. Yeah.
And so in my mind, I've always kind of had the idea that accidents aren't excuses, right? An accident does not excuse what you did. Like, it does not make it so that you are absolved of any penalty from what you did. And to be fair, I think that that's something that we apply in society in some places. Like, for example, if I rear end somebody else's car, that is an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but you still have to pay for the damage.
Right. Yeah. I avoid reckless driving, which was being negligent in this case, right? Like, I did everything that I could to prevent the situation from happening, but I'm still stuck with the bill for the bumper of that guy's car, not to mention my own.
Well, I think the case can be made that in that case, it was still a case of negligence, right? Why did you rear end somebody?
Let's just say they stopped short.
Right, but you should have been maintaining a safe driving distance.
The roads were slick. It was raining outside.
You should have been maintaining a safe driving distance given the conditions of the road.
I maintained a reasonable safe distance.
You did not, because as evidenced by rear-ending.
Yeah, but in 9 times out of 10, it was the storm of the century, and I have no way of knowing what the safe distance should be. So I adopted what the legal definition of the safe distance should be in this case. And it was not sufficient. Like, say there's like video evidence of this thing happening, and I was 2 car lengths behind them in a snowstorm going 30 miles an hour. I hit my brakes and the car locked up and just... And instead of careening off the road or anything else like that, it just... Bonk.
I don't know. I still think there's a pretty good case about negligence there.
I don't think so. I don't think anyone will get you for negligence on that. Definitely not reckless driving.
No, certainly not reckless. That's different.
Yeah. Because I think...
You weren't being particularly unsafe, but the facts of the scenario indicate that you made a mistake. And you made a mistake that you could have avoided.
Okay.
By other behavior.
New hypothetical. I rear-ended a person who was following someone too closely, and they stopped instantly in a situation in which it is normally impossible to stop instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, under any other circumstances, that car would have still, if they would have slammed on their brakes and the car locked up, it still would have been moving forward for mm-hmm. a period of time. Right. But instead, they hit something that causes them to right. come there to
was,
a complete
there,
stop.
Yeah, there was some debris in the road that stopped them dead in their tracks. Someone dropped a concrete block in the road and they ran into it. Yeah.
Yeah. A tungsten brick the size of a, you know, semi truck magically appears in front of them.
Right. They crash into it and you have no time to stop.
Right. Or I guess to make this more reasonable, a tree falls over.
Sure.
Yeah. Really fast somehow.
Actually, yeah. I think that, yes, would be a case of a genuine accident where, tree... That is obscured by other trees as it is falling, falls over, lands on the car in front of you. You could not have foreseen this happening. And then, of course, you don't have time to brake.
Yes.
Yes, I think the case can be made that that is a true accident. And I don't think you would be held responsible for it in that situation in practice.
You don't think so?
No.
Hmm. I mean, but would that be because the person's car was likely totaled by the tree and it doesn't matter?
No.
Okay. Interesting. This is interesting. This is unforeseen.
Unforeseen, you say?
This was unforeseen. So I guess back to my original question. Are there any true accidents?
Yes. Like that.
Right.
Thank you for providing an example which proves
You're welcome.
My case.
Thank you, philosophers. No. I don't know, but how common could those be? Like
rare, extremely.
Extremely rare.
Well, that particular situation is extremely rare anyway.
Yeah.
I can maybe think, if I think hard enough, I can maybe come up with a true accident that's more common than that. But I mean, but the thing is that people learn, and by people I mean like
reasonable
whole,
people.
Whole societies learn from true accidents, right? Like, we've learned about a lot of perils of things that we didn't consider dangerous before because people died from them. And now we treat them with respect because we know. So originally, maybe it was a true accident, but now it would be negligence if you hurt yourself this way.
Okay.
I'm thinking about like electricity.
All right. So to me, I guess this has less to do with accidents than it has to do with like, excuses, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another common case where people will say acts of God, for example, mm-hmm. and insurance clauses tend to be things that would fall into this category of true accidents almost.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have helped that, right? I live in a floodplain and I have flood insurance.
Mm-hmm.
How good a flood insurance do I have to get for this to be like ridiculously dumb, like a borderline insurance fraud? Like, for example, if I lived in a floodplain and my house flooded and I was able to cash out my insurance to rebuild my house, that just doesn't seem right to me. Like, a lot of people say like, well, I can't control the floods. No, but you can control where you build your house. And if you knew it was a floodplain.
Yeah. Well, but the insurance company also knows that you're beneath floodplain and is willing to take that risk by selling you the flood insurance. they're betting on it's not actually going to flood that badly.
Yeah.
And then it actually does. That sucks for them. They lose, but they owe you the money.
Yeah. I don't know. I agree. That's my whole point in this, but I think there are plenty of people who don't agree with that, and it really chafes me up.
Mm.
Like, all right. Hurricane Katrina. Let's go back to those of you who remember Hurricane Katrina. I'm at this point now in my life where I have almost no sympathy for the people whose homes flooded during Hurricane Katrina. I have very little, actually, at this point.
Right, because
they moved
vast majority of them, yeah, they knew that this kind of thing was going to happen again because it had happened before.
Yes.
And they rebuilt their house in the danger zone anyway.
Right. And not only that, I hate that there's this idea that, and here's why this is a problem. Those people are required to have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
How is that fair to the insurance agency? Because hear me out. If you're required.
Wait. Is the insurance company required to sell them insurance?
Yes.
Okay, that's not fair. Yeah, I think the insurance company should be able to say, nope, we don't want to sell you insurance because we know this house is going to be destroyed in the next decade.
Right.
Or at least they should be able to set the premium so high that they guaranteed make their money back.
Right. Which that's why it's also subsidized, I'm pretty sure.
Right. So, yeah. Yeah, they should be able to price it such that they know they're not going to lose money, or say nobody's going to pay these premiums because it's as expensive as paying another mortgage, because that's what it's going to come out to. So we're just not going to sell them insurance, and then people can decide, okay, well, if I'm going to be here in the danger zone without insurance, too big a risk for me. I'm going to live somewhere else. Or, you know what? I really like it here anyway, and I will accept the consequences and pay for my own house getting destroyed.
Yeah. So the two things that I hate about this whole situation, one, I'll go to the biggest offender in my mind. It's the people who knew that this happened. They're native to this area. They've lived there their whole lives. They've lived through multiple hurricanes, but every time they happen, you see the footage of people crying and just awestruck that, how could this happen? Like, you're below sea level. Like, that's the answer. You live in a tropical area below sea level and you are shocked that it flooded? What? Like, and I get also that there's some exacerbating factors to this, right? I also think this is one of the reasons why parting off responsibility to the government is a problem. Because I kind of get it. They were told by their political leaders that it is safe. We built these levees. They took on this responsibility to ensure the safety of these people, and these people trusted them. But they don't blame those people. They blame the nature.
Right. This reminds me of that quote from King of the Hill. Although it wasn't about flooding. It was about Phoenix, Arizona. This city is a monument to the arrogance of mankind and shouldn't exist.
I do not know the full context of that reference.
I think it was that it was of course Phoenix, it's out in the desert.
Naturally.
It's unbearably hot.
Yeah.
So that was the context of it. It's unbearably hot. Nobody should be able to live here, but people figured out a way to do it anyway. They're arrogant.
Yeah. Especially when they're
New Orleans is that. It's this is a place where nobody should be able to live, but we erected these walls to make it livable, except that the walls can fail, by the way.
Right.
And people are shocked when they do fail and buildings are destroyed and people die.
Yeah. And not only that, but it's the chain of events that happens when this kind of situation occurs. You get the people. And yes, guess what? I do agree. It would really suck if my house flooded. I agree. I don't say that it doesn't suck. But this happens, they blame the nature, and then people send millions of dollars to them in relief.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that they're doing them a huge favor. Like, I hold...
And it would be, if it were the first time it ever happened.
Yeah. But here's the... True. It would be if it was the first time it ever happened.
If this was the first hurricane, like... nobody knew these storms were possible. What a complete and utter disaster... We need to help these people.
Yeah. And then we do, and then it happens again, and we're like, okay, first time was a fluke, second time's a coincidence. So we help them again. Third time, all right, this is a pattern.
This is a pattern.
You need to move.
You need to get out of here. This is not a safe place to live. Yeah.
Right. And on the back of that comes this additional idea of, well, if you don't help those people, you don't care about those people. And you know what? For a while, I was like, no, I do care. That's why I want them to move and quit living there. But now I don't care. Like, I actually do not care. I burn that envelope when it comes by every 5 to 10 years with, you know, the poor people whose home was flooded. I'm like, nope, you're a moron. I don't feel bad for you. Like, and then I'm heartless at that point. And I don't know. I cannot help but feel like we're just enabling people to do stupid stuff. And then I'm in trouble when I don't feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, but it was an accident. I'm like, no, it's called the climate. Like, this happens.
Right. This is just a thing that happens.
Right. And not only that, but the same, there's a more common case where this kind of stuff occurs where people will get sucked in and involved. And this one's a little different. Our forever favorite philosophy breaking thing.
Children.
Yes. So child, it's usually not the child. It's the parent does something and then uses the child as the reason why you should help them.
Mm.
For example, how many times have you driven, you know, through a place where there are homeless people and you see the homeless person sitting there with the kid on their knee? Or,
oh, yeah.
Or when it's the migrant crisis, it's never just the adults that went through the desert. It's the adults with kids that are always like the ones we should feel bad for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're telling you, don't feel bad for the adult. You should feel bad for the kid. They didn't choose this. I'm like, you're correct. I do feel bad for the kid. But there's no way for me to help that child without also enabling the moronic behavior of the parent, who, by the way, is going to teach that moronic behavior to the child. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not even moronic. Maybe they're just geniuses because they figured out children are the perfect way to game the system, which that's probably an episode for their time, how children game the system. But I don't know. Like, am I being heartless with this? Am I being a jerk? I don't know. I'm jaded about it, to be honest, and I know that I'm jaded about it, but I also feel pretty good about being jaded about it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's kind of how that goes, isn't it?
Yeah.
People do feel good about being jaded.
About some things.
Well, yeah.
I feel like I'm justified to feel this way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And
I think maybe I can meet you halfway.
Okay.
Because, yes, I can get on board with the, this is an inhospitable place. We should not be encouraging you to live there by paying you every time something bad happens to you there. I think, but I guess my halfway point might be like some sort of scale of the frequency. Like, or like the particular, like, okay, again, New Orleans, particularly bad location.
Yeah.
Because it's below sea level.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also places that flood that aren't below sea level.
True.
Maybe I can make an exception for them.
Yeah. I think for me, it has to do with, did this happen in yours or my lifetime? Should one of us
also
have known better?
Also that, yeah.
Like,
yeah, because like, okay, imagine everyone on the Gulf Coast gets wise and decides it's a terrible thing to live here. My house is going to be destroyed.
Well, not even that. Just build them on stilts.
Or, yeah, or whatever.
Or not only stilts.
But let's assume that's not an option. That just to finish the scenario.
Okay, fine. It is.
Assume stilts are not an option, or people, they get wise enough to move, but not wise enough to use stilts. Anyway, and they go. And then a generation or two goes by, and people are like, man, it's beautiful out here. Why doesn't anyone live here? And they start building houses. And then the hurricane comes and they find out why. It's like, okay, well, I don't know if it was entirely your fault.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I would have to add a third caveat. If it happened in my lifetime and I knew better, mm-hmm. it happened in your lifetime and you knew better, and if it's just like provably a sufficiently high enough chance. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I can get on board with your frequency thing, but to me, it would have to be like a percentage of likelihood.
Because like the other thing that I'm thinking of is like, okay, around here, we also have natural disasters that destroy houses. We have tornadoes. The frequency of which are actually quite high,
Yes.
But they affect a small surface area, a small land area.
The frequency of tornadoes are high, but the frequency of
a particular home being struck by a tornado is very, very low. Right. Most people will not experience a tornado in their lifetime.
Or not one that destroys their home.
But, yeah. And many people won't even experience one that hits their town.
Right. You know, it's almost like there's a group of people that is in their entire profession to figure out these risks.
Insurance companies.
Yeah. Weird, ain't it? How that works out. Why don't we just let these people figure it out? And then guess what?
And that's why I was saying earlier about the flood insurance thing. It's like, yeah, insurance companies can decide to do that, but they're going to come to the conclusion that it's going to cost more than the house for us to make any money selling insurance to these people.
Or you will offer like alternate plans. Because back to the New Orleans example, there are some very old buildings in New Orleans that have just existed for over 100 years at least at this point, maybe 200 years. I don't know. I'm not a historian on New Orleans, but I know it's been around for a while. Some of these buildings are still there. I've been there. I've seen them, you know, they survived.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't destroy the entire city.
No. And it's not like that part of the city just didn't get flooded the same. It was all flooded. Those buildings are just built to withstand floods because back when there wasn't a bailout, you just built homes to suit the area. It would be like in Phoenix, Arizona, people building homes without AC units and then running up their health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right, because every summer people are having heat stroke.
Right. And the way you can deal with this whole situation, which, by the way, insurance companies do this kind of thing, especially with health, they will just refuse. They will look at your home. They will inspect it to see, not just... They don't come inspect your home to see how expensive it is to jack your rate up. They're also looking at what's the likelihood of the damage.
Right. What are the risks?
Yeah.
Right.
Like if you've built a floodproof home where the worst that's going to need to happen if you have a flood is you might need to repaint and redo the carpet. Oh, okay.
Right. You're going to have a pretty cheap rate.
Yeah. Because well, sure.
The cost of replacement or the cost of repair is going to be low.
Yeah. Restoration to what it was before.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, same thing with health insurance. A lot of health insurance companies will look at your health.
Right.
And if you are healthy, they will lower your rate. Not because they're society's way of keeping people healthy. That's not their purpose.
No, it's because the risk of insuring you is lower.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
Healthy people cost less to keep healthy.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, we're saying some really obvious stuff, but I also look around and see all the people that are just shocked and appalled at all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
I feel like I've understood how insurance works for a very long time. Is it just not something that people learn about?
I don't think that people understand how insurance works.
That's something we need to teach in schools, like public schools. Parents, tell your kids, explain to them how insurance works. Yeah,
I will throw them a bone because most people's direct experience with insurance is car insurance. And car insurance are a bunch of crooks, actually.
But they're crooks because they can be.
Yeah.
You're required by law to have one. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. Oh, you have to have this thing?
Huh. Cool. I can do whatever I want then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deck is stacked in my favor. I can just print money now. Thank you.
Yep.
Government. Let's talk a little bit about what most people's perception of insurance is besides the fact that their only interaction with it most of the time is probably car insurance and health insurance, at least in the US.
Yeah, so that's true. And health insurance.
But health insurance is one of those things that it's a part of my compensation to most people.
Right.
Like it's just a thing you get for being employed. Like I recently.
And you don't really interface. Most people do not interface with their health insurance company either.
No.
The doctor does. The doctor talks to your insurance.
Right.
Right. That's what I meant when I said most people's direct experience with insurance is with car insurance, because you actually have to call and make the claim.
Exactly.
But health insurance is a routine thing and you're not talking to your insurance company.
Mm, which is poor.
Right.
Mm, let's stick with the car insurance thing first and we'll come back to health insurance because okay. I have an interesting anecdote about that one, I think. Okay. So car insurance, why do people think that car insurance are crooks?
Well, of course, like any insurance is going to try to get out of paying money when you make the claim. But with car insurance, there's usually a lot more question about whose fault a particular incident was. And so they will try to, you know, twist the scenario to make it where it was your fault so they don't have to cover it or whatever. And then even when they do cover it, they, you know, they will raise your premium or otherwise cancel your policy. This has happened to me, actually, for an accident that was not my fault.
Really?
They canceled my policy. Yes.
Wow. That's weird.
They honored the claim, but then canceled my policy.
Was the amount of the claim less than that of your policy that you paid in up to that point?
I don't remember the specifics anymore.
That's interesting. Because to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense unless there's this weird...
It was a particularly expensive incident, yes.
Right. Because it also implies to me there's almost like a reason. Like they've looked at some data model and determined that, oh, if you've ever been in an accident, you are way more likely to be in an accident. Which doesn't seem intuitively correct to me.
Right.
But there has to be some calculus to that.
But especially if it's not your fault. Right. Like that's the thing. Like, yeah, if I had been in an accident that was my fault, it's like, oh, well, now we have evidence that you're a negligent driver. So we're going to charge you more because you're risky. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things that people have issue with is they're all about assessing blame.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hear me out, there's some benefit to that too.
They have an interest in doing that, yeah.
Right.
They have a legitimate interest in doing it. It just kind of turns out in questionable ways in practice.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's kind of really sucks about car insurance is the way they value things. So, like, for example... most people, when I say so-and-so totaled their car, what most people think when I say that phrase is, oh, they wrecked it really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But that has nothing to do, actually, with totaling a car.
No, it doesn't.
What does it mean to total a car?
First of all, the driver does not total a car. No. The insurance company totals a car.
Right.
They consider the car a total loss. That is what the term means.
Right. And what happens when a car is a total loss? How much do they pay out?
Well, that's going to depend on the policy.
But what do they base it off of?
The value of the car.
When?
At the time of the incident.
Right. Cars are also one of those things that intrinsically lose a crap ton of value.
Yeah.
And most people don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's not just cars. I think we all kind of see something this way. Like, my old man is particularly bad about this. He will point at something and say, that there right there was $10,000 brand new.
Right.
I'm like, cool, don't care.
Right, but what is it now?
But what is it worth?
Yeah, $500. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was 10 grand brand new. I'm like, yeah, we don't live when it was brand new. We live now, and now it's worth $500.
And now it's old and a piece of junk, yeah. Right.
And consequently, he is a hoarder because of it. Like, yes. He has a shed full of junk that was worth a lot of money.
Once upon a time was nice stuff, yeah.
Right. And... that plus sentimental value.
Yes.
Which is, and not only that, but like the value to you. Like, what does your car enable you to do? You know, it enables you, most people, to commute to your job, which is a huge value to you because you get to get paid from that job. You know, additionally, I think most people have this idea. They have like these two ideas of insurance. Either insurance is just one of those things that I have to pay for that doesn't do anything, which is understandable if you've dealt only with car insurance and companies and they've always determined that you're a bad driver. And most people do not like to believe that they can be at fault for anything, you know, but whatever. Or you're just really bad at arguing and they're just better at convincing you that it was your fault, which I also would not put past a car insurance company.
That is definitely something a car insurance company would do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or they would do like a partway job of saying like, yeah, this car is only worth this much money. Like, that's another interesting one to me. Why does the insurance company get to be the one to say how much the car is worth? It is in their interest for that car to be as cheap as possible then. Actually, at all times, it is worth it to them for the car to be dirt cheap. You know? Why do they get to decide? How is that not negotiable? You know, why can I not just tell you how much I think it's worth and just insure it for that amount? Which you can do, actually. Most people just don't know that.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Yeah, it's just that your premium will go up, and most people don't want that.
That is true. Most people only care about the immediate premium, which, for those who don't know, premium is the monthly cost that you pay.
Or annual, depending.
Oh, I cannot imagine paying that annually.
I do.
Oof. Do Do you pay for the year in advance or the year in retrospect?
The year in advance.
Okay. That's not too bad then.
Right. I'm just avoiding the installment fee by doing that.
Oh, yeah. Then that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
If you've got the money, do it.
Yeah, I save money by doing that. Yep.
Understandable.
And also, it means they can't pull any BS.
The rate changed. No, it didn't.
No, it didn't. I've already paid for this entire year. Yep.
Yep. I don't care what happens in the economy. I am going to be insured for at least the remainder of this calendar year.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that's another thing. Like, humans are notoriously bad at planning for incidences. But I think that's also... And that's not something that I don't think... I don't think insurance contributes to that. I think it's a different thing. I think it's the thing I was talking about before, is the people are just like shocked and appalled that a bad thing happened, and they want to have as much money right then as possible, which, hear me out, nothing wrong with that. I also like having a ton of liquidity if I can, but it also puts you, but it's not liquidity if you're spending it constantly, I guess. Just mm-hmm. poor financial planning, which is another thing most people are very bad at, me included.
Yeah.
You know? But health insurance, that's okay. The other thing that a lot of people interface with.
Here we go.
Okay. I've been shopping for health insurance lately because I did my financial year, the end of my financial year is coming up, because I do mine a quarter behind, which I think is smart because I figure out how much money I'm going to spend on people for Christmas based on what my leftovers was for the year. So if it's been a bad year for me, sorry, kids. But my wife and I looked at this and determined that we spent more money this year than we've ever spent on health insurance, on health expenses.
Mm.
And almost none of it was covered by health insurance that we have. Like, we could have actually come out this year positive if we would have just
paid
for it. Yeah. Just uninsured. And so I'm looking at this like, why on earth am I still paying for this then? And there are reasons, right? Everyone's go-to is, well, you could get cancer.
Right. Yeah. That's the ultimate thing that everyone is scared of. Not cancer specifically, but a catastrophic health incident. Could be cancer, could be some sort of injury, a car accident. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that. Where it's like, okay, cool. And now I have this $100,000 bill.
Right. Which, I mean, my answer to that is, yeah, but even the worst health insurance policies will cover that.
Right.
Because that is the rarest case.
It's super rare, and that is the thing health insurance is for.
Right.
But can I get a super cheap health policy with a $10,000 deductible that saves me from stuff like that? Yeah.
Yeah, you can. That and health insurance also does one other thing, I guess, that car insurance doesn't do. And they negotiate rates with the doctor, which is why they deal with a doctor, not you.
Right. They don't want you to come back and say, well, the doctor told me it's going to cost this much. Right. They're going to want to have the insurance company has something to say about that.
They're like, whoa, hold on. We're not paying that much.
Right.
Doctor, we're paying this much. And the doctor says, okay.
Or, yeah, they also don't want you saying, okay, yeah, the doctor asked me if I wanted this, this, and that. And I said, yes. And here's what it costs. Here's a bill. The insurance company is going to say, no, up front, this is what we're going to pay for, and you can choose to pay for the other stuff if you want it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I do want to do that. Right. I want to be able to determine my level of care, because sometimes, more importantly, I want to be able to determine my spouse's level of care. Because my wife and I both would go super cheap on ourselves. But like, I also want to be able to determine, because this is also more likely the case, if one of us is to be hospitalized, it's most likely that that person is probably not in the right mind to make good financial decisions.
Yes.
And even though the health insurance agency is perfectly within their right mind to make that, they are incentivized against my actual health in a lot of cases, because they can drop me. Your health insurance company could go, we could do this expensive thing right now that would prolong their life and actually lead to them having a good quality of life for the rest of their life, and because of that have less health complications. Or we could just cut it off. There's gonna be complications. Cool, thanks for letting us know, we'll pay for it. They pay to get it cut off, they hang up the phone, cancel your account. They made their money, walk away. Like, no thank you.
Right. Like, but I still want that.
But it's my leg, you know. And I think that doctors have some blame to take in this too, because doctors, and granted, I don't mind doctors wanting to make money. That's not what bothers me.
No.
But the idea is that the doctor should be the advocate for your health.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this weird notion in our society that doctors want to make you as healthy as possible. No, they don't. They want to make money. And
fixing you is not always the way to do that.
Exactly. And most people know this when yes. you, like, when you explain, but especially when it comes to, like, pharmaceutical companies, because the idea behind a pharmaceutical company is we want to make drugs that are so good because they help people. That's the ignorant way of thinking about it, you know? But the reality is like, if you were the pharmaceutical company, why would you solve a problem when...
Right, when you can just treat a problem forever.
Yeah. Right, and get paid, you know?
Yeah.
There are reasons, I think, maybe you would want to do this, but the amount of money you would have to charge for it would be mm-hmm. so high, and then you would get the public backlash of... Oh, I can't believe, Burr, you have this drug, Burr, that cures cancer, but you want to charge people $2,000 for it, Burr.
Never mind the fact that the existing treatment is tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still too high. And this is another place where I think the government is like the enemy of this, is in the same way that people do not do obviously bad things because the government will come after them, they don't do obviously good things because the government will come take it. Like, people could just say, someone could run on a platform of, we're going to vote to make this company fork over the formula for the drug so that we can all have it. Because it's too beneficial to everybody. So we're just going to put a gun to their head and take it. Right, everyone? That's the right thing to do, isn't it? So if I were that company, I would just never say anything about it.
Right.
Like, I would just stick with trying to treat things. Don't even do the research. Why would we cure cancer? You know, besides the fact that, like, yes, there are these folks who have, you may have family members that have cancer that you want to have a better life, owner of pharmaceutical company, but with all that money you're raking in, you could also just afford to give them the best of care, including your treatment, you know? So yeah, I think that's, it all comes back to the government being the problem.
Doesn't it always? Isn't that how every episode ends up?
Yeah, it kind of does. But I don't know. I'm actually excited. I've been excited talking to health insurance companies. Like, it's just interesting to me. Like, because I feel like there are really good deals out there. If you just negotiate them and, like, just realize that you don't have to pick any of them right now. And not only that, but, like, you can do things that most people don't even know you can do. Like, you can actually sign up and get on a contractual obligation to one if you wanted to, like, which a lot of people are afraid of. And I understand that because you're taking on an additional risk in one way, but you can also secure yourself lower rates for doing so. Like, that's another thing people don't like, is the contract mindset where it's like, oh, like, remember phone companies and cable when you had to sign a contract to get phone or cable, and everyone's like, man, I can't believe the evil cell phone or the cable TV cable company
makes me have to sign a contract for 2 years or whatever
if I want their TV. It's like, yeah,
how but else? That's the only reason they can offer it to you at that price.
Yeah,
the only reason they can offer it to you at that price is because then they can, if they can rely on you to pay it for the next 2 years, then they can still make the money that they need to. But otherwise, the setup cost is too high for them to take that risk.
Yeah. And most of these places did offer a month-to-month rate. It's literally the same thing as when you get a lease.
Yes. We talked about this recently.
Yeah.
And yeah, the lease is good for the landlord, but it's also good for you.
Mm-hmm. Your rates, most of the time, can't go up.
Right. During the lease. Right.
During the lease.
When the lease is up for renegotiation, well, that's another thing. But yeah, the landlord is not going to be able to just kick you out because somebody else will pay more for the place.
Right. Yeah. I think that negotiation and bartering is a thing that we've lost with, you know, that is a skill that everybody should be taught and, or just know that it's an option.
Right. Yeah. I think we're used to it from places like supermarkets and things like that, where it's just like, here's a price tag, take it or leave it.
Right.
And people assume that everything is that way. This has a number on it, so this is what I have to pay.
Right. Well, not only that, but like, to be fair, I think the market has kind of done this for you in some ways. The market often serves as your negotiator when you're trying to market a service or a product to the broader public. If the market is functioning as it should, everything's already as cheap as it could be, or as cheap as you would pay for it, you know, because competition drives the price down. It's when competition doesn't really exist and people are backed up, propped up by governments or artificially created monopolies, usually with the assistance of the government or subsidies, that they can do whatever they want, you know.
Right. Or again, with the whole you have to have car insurance thing, things like that, where it's like you are the cards are stacked against you because you are put in a position where you have to buy this from somebody. So even if none of the choices are good, you still have to pick one.
Right. Yeah.
And you can try to negotiate with them, but they can just say, no, because you have to buy it.
Yeah. Which is just ridiculous.
So what have we learned about accidents?
I think the overall lesson, and this is why insurance was talked about so much in this whole deal, most things are actually your fault. Or you're still responsible for them, even if something else happened, right?
You're responsible for cleaning up the consequences.
Yeah, even if you didn't directly
do it. Because responsible means two different things, right? Even if you're not responsible for the thing that happened.
The cause.
Yeah, if you're not responsible for causing the thing, you are responsible for the aftermath.
Right. The best example of this is, tornado blew my house down. All right, well, you can try to sue the tornado, but it doesn't have a bank account.
Right.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
We're sorry. But that'll be like $80,000 to rebuild your house.
Right.
And I get this idea that people have about wanting there to be a safety net. Right? That's the thing everyone always talks about, is we should create a safety net so that when things like this happen, people's lives aren't destroyed. Well,
guess what? We have one. It's called insurance.
It's called insurance. Yeah. And not only that, but I mean, the reality also is that that does not occur in nature. Like, safety nets are a total social construct. Like,
That's fine.
It is, but a lot of these people would argue that it is like an apex moral good to like not let these things happen to people. Mm. When or that we're causing people harm by not helping them when the crazy thing happens.
No, that was going to happen to them even if we didn't exist.
Right. And also, every effort should be made by you to never be in a vulnerable enough place to allow that to happen. I'm not saying that you have to have your home's value in cash in a bank account. That's not what I'm saying.
In fact, that's not a good idea.
That's actually a horrible idea. You're just going to lose money. But just know that it can happen. And then be prepared for when it does. Have a plan. Like, for example, if my house was burned down tonight, I would still have somewhere to go to sleep. It wouldn't be here. I'm not saying where it'll be, but I know what I would do. And eventually, you know, I'll get back to where I am now. It would be a huge inconvenience, but I think inconveniences are just a part of every life. You know, I do think that there are a handful of things, and I think this is what we talked about before, that are just not accidents. Like, for example, if you are born with a genetic disorder, arguably, that's an accident. I don't even put that at the feet of your parents.
No.
Because
they had no control over that. Yeah.
Right. I don't think that you should be like, well, sorry, you were just born into a super disenfranchised circumstance because of genes. You know, you were at a permanent physical disadvantage from everybody else that you can just not overcome. Like, and by overcome, I mean, like, you might find ways around your disability to thrive.
Right, but you always have to work harder for everything. Yeah.
Right. And so those things are fine. You know, kids, I get it. They're pretty much property anyway, you know. I will mention that every time I get a chance, because that's one of my favorite stances to take. But yeah, remember, it is your responsibility, and insurance is your friend, or can be.
Yes, when it's not compulsory.
If you leave it alone, it can be the best asset because they do all the work for you to figure out like what's risky and not risky. You don't need to go figure it out and
go through right, that's all going to go into your premium, and you pay a small fee on top of that for the convenience of them having figured all that out for you.
Right. And
facilitating whatever needs facilitating to fix whatever. Yeah.
Sure. And they're not a charity, but no business is.
No.
But at least you can get what you pay for.
Right.
Not something that you have to have, you know, like car insurance. I hope this was very educational for you, young listener out there. I hope if a young listener ever listens to this, it's very valuable information to know, I think. And I'm still of the opinion that we should teach it in schools.
Yes.
Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.